Welcome back to the Nerdy Laser Podcast. This is the last episode of 2017. That's right. I recorded the actual episode a few weeks ago, but I wanted to wait a little bit to get this out. And now here I am on the last day of 2017 recording the intro. So I hope everybody had a great holiday vacation if they went anywhere or if they just got some time off of work. And if you worked, I'm sorry. I've done it before and I appreciate what you do. It may sound silly, but I've worked on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. I just did that last year, worked both days, and it was very hard. And so anybody who has to do the same, thank you. And I am lucky enough not to be on that schedule anymore. So so maybe the same can be said for some of you that do not like your situation. That being said, 2018 seems like a brand new start, right? That's what they always say. So I think y'all should take this opportunity to set some goals, you know. I'll give you a little advice that I've learned over the years. It's a saying I've heard a long time ago, but it's stayed with me, is plan your work and work your plan. That means that you need to set up your plan. That, you know, everybody plans their goal and all that. That's the easy part. But then you have to actually do it. It sounds trivial, like it sounds like, well, duh. But I really believe those two things have helped me a lot. So yeah, I've done a lot this year, and I plan to do even more in 2018. Obviously, the Nerdy Laser Podcast has taken off a little bit as far as episodes. We've upped our episodes. I have an unofficial co-host in Chris DiPetrillo. He's helped me out a lot. I've had some great guests on, Steve and Michaud, my buddy Carson Hunt, a good friend of mine. You know, I've Jerry Chandler even joined me. I've had some pretty fun guests on, and we always do good subjects. I wish the Nerdy Laser Podcast was more regular, but for right now, it is what it is. If I can do, you know, a couple every month, that's what I hope to do in 2018. The Nerdy Laser is not just a podcast, though. I don't know if you knew this, but it's also a YouTube channel. That's right. I do unboxings on YouTube. I do comic book hauls on YouTube. So check those out. The Nerdy Laser Podcast on YouTube. And, you know, as always, I'm doing the wrestling podcast. ThePProWrestlingRoundtable.com is where you can find that. You can also find it on iTunes. So that's cool. Hopefully we make a bigger presence on YouTube soon. But that's in the works, but I'm not too close on that yet. Maybe 2018 we'll get there. Throw up some special interviews and stuff. So yeah, lots of cool things happening. I've got some plans for 2018. I don't know if they'll work or if they will be put into place, but I'm hoping to do more writing and more stuff like that. If you didn't know I was also a writer, you can find me at on Amazon, actually. My pen name is R.T. Yule. The novella I have is Fat Trapped. I also have a couple short stories on there, so if you want to find me there, you can. It's R.T. E.W.E.L.L. That is how I spell Yule. So, anyway, I hope you all have enjoyed this little bit of about my life and little suggestions and stuff like that. 2017 was a big part. A big year for me. I got married. That's, you know, terrific. I've, you know, me and my wife now have been married for 3 months, and it's great. So we got married on the beach. Couldn't have been more picture perfect. Outside of that, I really appreciate any of you guys that listen, and please spread the word if you want to. Leave a review on iTunes. That would help me out a lot more than people think it does. So, yeah, outside of that, I'm going to go ahead and get to the show. This is an episode with me and Chris talking about 90s movies, but the subject I gave Chris was 90s movies that are totally 90s. So these aren't just movies that are in the 90s, but they are also movies that just scream the 90s when you think of them. So I hope you all enjoy. Chris was very excited about doing this episode. I've already got him lined up for the next episode. We are going to be talking either about action movies, or it might just be a Jean-Claude Van Damme episode. I will have to talk to him and see what he would like to do. We might do both, set both of those up for the future. So I think they'd be fun episodes to talk about. If you have any suggestions on what episode, what subjects you would like me to cover, just contact me over on Instagram at Nerdy Laser, Twitter at Nerdy Laser. Those are two good ways. Follow me on there. I post a lot of toy stuff on there, so on Instagram especially. A lot of pictures of my collection and such. So, yeah. Like I said, thank you all very much for listening and supporting me, and I really do appreciate it. I hope 2017 was a good year for you guys, and if it wasn't, even if it was, I hope 2018 is even better. So, with all that being said, let's go on with the show.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night with cold sweats thinking about professional wrestling?
Have you ever done the Ric Flair strut thinking no one was watching, but they were? Woo!
Have you ever binge-watched 18 hours of The Ultimate Warrior only to want more?
If the answer is yes, then do we have the cure for you?
The Pro Wrestling Roundtable.
We talk about the past, present, and future of professional wrestling, brother.
We review wrestling movies and even jump in a time machine to review past wrestling events.
You can find us on iTunes and www.theprowrestlingroundtable.com.
Also on Twitter at @PodcastPWR.
Also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/ESOPro.
We bring the squared circle to the round table.
Welcome back to the Nerdy Laser Podcast, and as I promised, I have my good friend Chris DiPetrillo from Figures Toy Company back, and we are going to be talking about a subject that I mentioned to him quite a while ago, and he loved the idea, and then we had Saved by the Bell to get through, and then we talked about horror movies, and then we talked about Christmas movies, and so now we are finally going to talk about 90s movies that are totally 90s.
And this is a conversation I've been looking forward to for a while, because just kind of based on the Saved by the Bell talk, I think you know that we're going to be going in some pretty fun directions with this.
Oh, absolutely. And so the 90s is my favorite decade. Is it yours, or what do you think, 80s?
I mean, I really can't decide between the 80s and 90s. You know, I was born in 80, so I was too young to appreciate a lot of the stuff in the 80s. So I'd probably lean more 90s, because that's when I was in my formative years, and that's when a lot of stuff was really striking a chord with me.
That's me too. 90 to 97 are my like prime years of like grabbing a hold of stuff.
Because and I think 1996 probably, just for all the stuff that we talk about, be it television, music, wrestling, all that stuff, 1996 is probably my favorite year of the popular culture that I follow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the year I graduated, was 96, so past that, I remember more like 94, 95, 96, so all those years, my high school years just all kind of blend together, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we have a list of movies. Now, we're not going to talk all movies in the 90s. What this is just movies that were made in the 90s and just scream 90s. You know,
they just have that 90s feel for some reason, whether it be a fad, a trend, the cast.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I guess one of the first things, One of the reasons I wanted to do this is just because the 90s are my favorite, and there just are so many movies that I love from the 90s that people usually give me a weird look. Why do I like those movies? Especially if they're not from that era. You know, I mean, yep. I work with a lot of, or in my past job, actually, my new job, not so much, but my past job, I worked with a lot of 20-year-olds, 24, 25-year-olds. And, I mean, just the gap of entertainment is crazy. So they would always, you know, shake their head if I showed them something or mentioned a movie. Or they would say, oh, yeah, my dad likes that, too. You know, something like that.
It's the dreaded dad comment.
It's the worst. It's the worst. The best was I mentioned to somebody, I said, wow, you are young. You don't even remember Saturday morning cartoons, do you? And he said, no, but my dad's told me about them. I was like, oh, gosh.
I'm not sure. I can't recall if I mentioned it on the Saved by the Bell podcast, but one of my good friends, she's a teacher. She teaches junior high and high school age kids. And one day she came into class and, you know, told everybody to quiet down. She was starting the lesson and a kid was playing on his cell phone. And she said, put the cell phone away. Who do you think you are? Zach Morris. And the kid looked up at her and said, completely seriously, who's Zach Morris?
Yeah.
And she told me that story and she prefaced it. She's like, this is a story that's going to break your heart. Just make sure you're sitting down because this is how old we are now. And I'm just like, because you know what? My body might be changing, but mentally I'm still in the same zone. Like I might be a dad. I might be a professional, but mentally my heart and soul are still with the 80s and 90s and the era that I grew up in.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Me too. I mean, heck, I still collect toys. I mean, I know you do too. I mean, at least you have you can vicariously collect toys through your kid. I don't have children, so I'm just a 40-year-old guy buying toys at Walmart.
I've got my job and my son, and both of those are my excuse. But I picked up some cool stuff this week. There were two new Incredible Hulk figures that I wanted for the collection, and I grabbed them this week. I got the Disney Store exclusive Planet Hulk from the Thor movie. And I got the new 14.5-inch Marvel Legends that comes in the black case, the black box.
Oh, nice.
Yep, picked up both of those this week. Little birthday treat to myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I got a Tatanka from the WWE Mattel Elites. I got off of Amazon for $8 shipped.
I got it too.
I mean, right? Why wouldn't you buy that? I mean, like, it's an awesome figure.
No, but I absolutely grabbed that. I've been, you know, for anyone who's listening who hasn't listened before, if you're a newcomer, my you know, soon-to-be 3-year-old son is obsessed with WWE, and rightfully so, because good old dad is too. But I'm always browsing Amazon for the deals, and you know, he has his favorite guys. But if he's just, you know, if he's well behaved and looking for like a little treat or something like that, I'll look for like a cheap guy for him. And some of the guys that I've gotten him on sale, he's wound up appreciating them by watching them like on the network and stuff like that. I grabbed him like a Bret Hart for like $4 once, and he knows who Bret Hart is now. I grabbed him a British Bulldog for $6. So yeah, it's a haven for good deals if you've got kids that just want some cool figures to play with, or for guys like us. I mean, that Tatanka, I was never a huge Tatanka fan, but it's just a really cool figure.
It really is. Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, it's got the tomahawk and everything. Maybe we'll do a figure podcast one day. So yeah, let's fire it off. I don't know if it's gonna be your first pick, but I know you're just dying to talk about a certain movie, so you can start.
Yeah, I mean
it off.
We could kick it off strong with that. So for a 90s movie that really exemplifies the 90s, I am going to have to look at 1993's Airborne. And so Airborne, for those who do not know, is not a movie about fighter pilots. It's not even a movie about planes. It is a movie about a surfer who relocates to his aunt and uncle's home in Cincinnati, Ohio, where you can't do much surfing, and briefly joins the school hockey team and winds up becoming the star rollerblader of the city and wins the bullies over thanks to his skills, and it all culminates in the ultimate rollerblade race at the end of the movie.
Like every classic sport movie.
Yeah, every classic duel, every classic face-off. And if you want to talk 90s, then you've got the star of the movie is Shane McDermott. Shane McDermott had become famous for playing the lead role on Swan's Crossing, which was a show that you just recently got into, thanks to my recommendation, watching that on streaming. So
I didn't realize it was the same guy.
You didn't realize it was the same guy?
No.
Yeah. Garrett Booth from Swan's Crossing.
I totally see it now, but I didn't put two and two together.
Nope. That was his only feature film starring role. You had Brittany Powell as the love interest, and Brittany Powell was the love interest in basically everything back then. She made appearances on California Dreams. She was the headmaster's daughter on Saved by the Bell, the college years, in that one episode where Zach pretended to be Professor Lasky.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, she was the girl there. She was also in a great action movie called To Be the Best around the same time. So it was funny how she was playing a 20-something girlfriend of a kickboxer a couple of months before she was in Airborne. You had Alana Ubach, who was from Beakman's World. She was in it as her best friend. Young Seth Green, complete with red hair parted down the middle, was Cousin Wiley. Edie McClurg of Hogan Family and Ferris Bueller fame was the aunt. And Mr. Dewey from Saved by the Bell was the uncle.
That is great. It always comes back to Saved by the Bell, right?
Everything in life ties into Saved by the Bell. That is my mission statement. I'm sticking by it.
I have not seen that movie in years, so I forgot most of those people were in it.
So that movie, I saw that movie in the theater when it first came out, and I was just like, now, you know, I'm going to put myself out on the line here. I can't skate for crap. I can't ice skate. I can't rollerblade. I can't regular roller skate. I can't do any of it. You'd have to rent a fifth skate for my ass just to put me down, or a third skate for my ass just to put it on me and wheel me across the floor. But that movie was, you know, of course I was drawn to it because it was a cast that I liked and people that I liked. It's just such a good movie. Like, it's an exciting movie. It's funny. It's like a heartfelt teen comedy style movie, which, you know, I'm a huge fan of. Jack Black is in it as one of the bullies. It's one of his earliest roles.
Wow.
It's a movie that I can still quote to this day, and a good number of my friends feel the same way about it. So usually on Facebook, maybe like every 6 months, one of us has like a status and we know it's an Airborne quote, and then we just go off for the day quoting Airborne and putting scenes up. The soundtrack was really good. The main theme song, now again, this is how 90s this movie is. If you remember the pop star Jeremy Jordan, who had a hit song called The Right Kind of Love, this was around the New Kids on the Block era. He did the theme song, which was called My Love is Good Enough. That is a song that gets constant airplay on my iPod. So I actually have the Airborne soundtrack on my iPod. And this is a movie that I saw in the theater, that I taped off HBO, that I had the official VHS release of. And years later, I had a copy on DVD through certain means, you know, transferring the VHS to DVD. And there actually is an official DVD release, which is done through the Warner Brothers vault through Amazon. So as opposed to making 100,000 copies and putting them in the stores, they're more or less print to order DVDs. And even though I have this movie in several formats, because it's one of my favorites, I actually have the Warner Brothers vault edition of Airborne. So I have a movie that many would say does not deserve the classic status in a classic status level of packaging and promotion right there. But it's just a great, great fun movie. You know, you can kill a good hour and a half watching it. Everybody in it's likable. There's so many quotes. There's so much fun. It's just a great movie. But it really exemplifies the 90s because of the cast, because of the soundtrack. You've got so many of the trends of the time. You know, everyone wanted to be a cool surfer dude or a cool rollerblade dude. This kid's both. So, you know, he's got the best of both worlds. Just an awesome, awesome movie that I can't get enough of it. Anytime it's on, I'll watch it. And if it's not on, I've certainly got more than enough ways to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, Rollerblades in general is very 90s. I mean, that's pretty much when they came out, as far as I remember. Early 90s was just they were just very hot. I attempted to rollerblade. I had a few pairs, and my friends were much better than me. Like you, I'm not a very very good with wheels on my feet. So I remember I did end up in the hospital because of rollerblades. I hurt my knee. I went down a big hill, a very, very big hill, and
Were you in the climax of the movie? Because this is all starting to sound familiar now.
I know, right? I was the fat guy in the bag. Yeah, I mean, I didn't break anything or anything like that, but it was very dumb, and yeah, rollerblades were very dangerous, I feel. Since you've and I remember watching Airborne, but it was not one that I watched more than once or twice, probably. I just remember seeing it. I didn't hate it. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it just didn't latch on to me. Probably because there was already a rollerblading movie in my heart, which I'll just go ahead and get into. I've mentioned it, I think, on this podcast several times. But Prayer of the Roller Boys.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's from 91, so it was really early in the craze. And it starred Corey Haim. What's the girl's name? I always forget her name.
Patricia Arquette, yep.
Yeah, Patricia Arquette. And, I mean, you just have to see a trailer for this movie. It takes place in the future, and it's like these gang of rollerbladers have taken over, and they're like drug dealers. And just everything about it, it's got a great opening, much like the BMX movie Rad. It's got a cool opening where the guy is rollerblading throughout a pool and stuff. And, you know, any movie that has a flannel shirt tied around his waist, I assume is a 90s movie, you know, like that was me. I was always the kid with a shirt tied around my waist. Heck, I even do it now when I go to conventions sometimes. It's just something that makes me... It just takes me back to that time, because people don't necessarily do it now, and I just feel like it's a very 90s act.
And it had that whole post-apocalyptic sci-fi, like, and that type of stuff. I mean, we saw that in the 80s, but I feel like the 90s really got into that whole dystopian future. Like, every movie, especially a lot of the low-budget stuff, you get a lot of the whole, you know, the future is bleak, the future is dark, like all this wacky stuff's happening. Like, it was never like, hey, it's 2020 and the suburbs are fine. It's like everything was decimated, and this was another one of those movies.
Yeah, I mean, and it was rated R. I mean, this was not a movie that was,
this was not
necessarily
a kid movie.
For kids. I mean, I was 13. I must have been 13 when I saw it, 14 maybe. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's not for kids, so that made me even love it even more, I think. But this movie has an excellent bad guy, is what I think most people don't recognize it for. His name is Christopher Collette, and Gary Lee is, he was the main bad guy for the movie, and... he was one of my favorite parts of the movie. And I always wanted a sequel. They set it up for a sequel.
And do you remember where Christopher Collette comes from? Do you remember what the big movie that – I think we've mentioned it maybe off the record. Well, actually, we talked about it a little bit in the horror podcast, but Christopher Collette is from Sleepaway Camp.
I think I do remember that, yes. Is he
– Yep.
Paul.
He was the friend Paul in Sleepaway Camp.
That's right. Well, he was in a few 80s movies that were pretty popular. Manhattan Project.
Yep.
I remember that one. And then apparently all he does now is voice work. So he still apparently works. I mean, he does a lot of voices in anime and animation. So.
Well, that's kind of like Will Friedle from Boy Meets World is famous for voice work now. Like, he does all that stuff.
Really?
Him and Jason Marsden that played Rich on Step by Step, the two of them are like huge into voice acting now. And a matter of fact, I think Will Friedle did Batman Beyond.
Oh yeah, that's funny. But if you haven't seen Prayer of the Roller Boys, it's so hokey. Like it really is hard to take serious. But
they were racist. It was like a rollerblading Ku Klux Klan.
It really was. I mean, they really were. I mean, for the most part, I mean, they were drug dealers, meth. I mean, I think they were selling a new drug that they were making in a trailer that was in a warehouse. The rope. Yes, I forgot. Day of the Rope.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
This is why you had me on. See that? We've counter each other pretty well.
Yes. Yes, it is why I have you on. But yeah, and Corey Haim is great in it. It's unfortunate that the I really like Corey Haim, and I really feel like the movies that he's in, he's really good in. And it's unfortunate that, you know, an addiction stopped him, because I really feel like, I mean, if you look at Robert Downey Jr., I mean, if Corey Haim could have dug out of it, I really think his acting was that good. But,
well, he was very likable. I mean, I know, and you know, you find out through the years, especially with all the stuff that Corey Feldman's revealed, that they both had their issues. But this was also a change of pace for him, because you were used to like either a goofy high school comedy like License to Drive, or something a little more heartfelt like Lucas. Like, yes. This was really the first time that he did anything that was like super action, dark, you know, like it kind of took him on a different path a little bit. And actually, that's a good segue into another 90s movie, not one I expected to talk about, but do you remember when he and Corey Feldman and Nicole Eggert did the movie Blown Away?
You know, I feel like I do remember that, because I think I remember getting it confused, because there's another Blown Away movie from the 90s.
The one with Jeff Bridges, with the bombers.
Yeah, and Tommy Lee Jones.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
No, this one was from 1992, so this was one of those movies, like, I wouldn't call it a Skinamax movie, but it was one of those movies that usually came on around 10 o'clock, and Nicole Eggert was Corey Haim's real-life girlfriend. She's the girl from Charles in Charge, and then she went on Baywatch. And this was kind of like the movie that was basically telling you, hey, remember those kids that you grew up liking? They're all adults now, and they're going to be doing some adult stuff. And Corey, there's the infamous scene of it is Corey Haim's at a party. Nicole Eggert's like this rich bitch kind of girl, and she brings him upstairs and starts seducing him. And he's got her against the wall, and he's kind of like pulling at her bra and underwear and stuff. And she just says, rip it. And he starts literally ripping her clothes off and going at it with her. And it was more or less one of those movies trying to say, they're adults now. Like, this is what they can do. Like, almost kind of like rubbing it in your face. It was like it wasn't even like an action movie. It was kind of like an erotic thriller.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of awkward to see like these kids like, wait a minute, like, you were in License to Drive like 2 years ago. Like, what's going on here? Dream a Little Dream is another one.
Yeah.
You know, another
like Jesse Spano being in Showgirls. Like, it was just such an obvious, like, she's not the Jesse Spano from Saved by the Bell anymore.
I mean, it wasn't that obvious, but probably because it was a low budget movie and it wasn't really marketed that way. But, you know, they played some dark characters, and it was funny because maybe like a year or two after that, they were trying to do like goofy comedies again. And it's like, all right, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to do comedy? And it's like, not that you can't do both, but it was almost, like I said, trying to tell you that, you know, we're getting away from this. And then they kind of went back to it. But at that point, you know, all of their stars were starting to fade. So I guess they were just doing whatever script came up.
Grabbing at anything.
Yep.
Yeah. So another one, I think it's right at 1990. On the offset, it doesn't really look like a 90s movie, but I feel like Point Break almost started it a little bit, like, because it's right at 1990 and they're doing all the extreme sports kind of stuff. This is the original Point Break, and you have Brody, played by Patrick Swayze, and I feel like he is totally a 90s character.
Was it 90 or 91 that Point Break came out?
I think I looked it up, and I feel like it was 90, but
yeah, I mean, either way, it's a 90s movie.
Yeah,
that doesn't even matter. But yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree, because that was, you know, back in the day with you know, MTV Sports and the X Games and all that stuff started getting popular. So this was basically a way of factoring that type of stuff into a big budget action thriller. And it was fantastic. I thought it was a great movie. I remember renting it. I remember watching it on video when it came out, and just thought it was just a great, fun action movie. Never thought anything of Keanu Reeves acting back then. But I think that given what some of his performances are critiqued for, I think that he fit in the role in Point Break pretty well. I think that's one of his better roles that he's ever done.
Oh yeah, I loved Keanu Reeves. I mean, from Bill and Ted, that's where I knew him as a kid, to Parenthood, and I loved him in Parenthood. And then and Point Break was sort of his movie where it's like, this is my, like, I'm not a kid anymore, like, I'm, this is my grown-up movie. I feel like we're going to get that a lot in the 90s. But yeah, Point Break is great. And at Patrick, I still can't watch the remake. I've tried to, and it just does not grab me at all. I had it on for about
5 minutes one day and just lost interest immediately.
I can't. They do the whole cliffhanger beginning. Like, if you remember the movie Cliffhanger, which is another 90s movie, like the very beginning, it's almost the same exact opening for each movie, like, and I just couldn't do it. But I was excited about the Point Break remake because Jared Butler was supposed to be Brody, and I thought that would have been excellent.
And yep, they went through like several casting choices for both roles, I think.
Yeah, for both of them, yeah. But Patrick Swayze really is hard to follow. He really, I mean, that was his height too, with Ghost around that time. I mean, he was just on fire, and I loved him as Brody. And Laurie Petty is
Laurie Petty as the love interest, as the chick that people are fighting over. It's like, isn't you kind of look at it now and you're like, all right, okay.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
But back then she was like, the cute girl, like A League of Their Own, Point Break, like that was her thing.
Yeah, she's Tank Girl, which is another 90s movie, but I've never been a huge fan of Tank Girl, but you know.
She's also in The Army Now, which was the Pauly Shore reign of terror and cinema.
Well, so let's just talk about it, because that is the 90s. I mean, Pauly Shore is the 90s, like, and starting with Encino Man, which is one of my favorite movies, and Pauly Shore was excellent in Encino Man because he wasn't the star.
Pauly Shore and Sean Astin, like, that movie, I mean, that, and you know, we kind of mentioned it before we went on, when talking about some movies, that movie is also one of my favorites. That's a movie I could watch 5 times a day and not get sick of it, because you'll laugh at something different every time. You'll just forget about something and laugh at something new every time you watch it.
Yeah, it's one of Brendan Fraser's first movies, or at least first big movies. It's a great movie. I just there's so many, I can quote that movie too. There's so many things. I love the bully in that movie. He's such a prick in that movie, and shush. where he staples them to the bulletin board outside of school.
And I mean, Pauly Shore made a living of being Pauly Shore. Like, you never got Pauly Shore playing, you know, a hip hop kid in one movie and, you know, a mute in another movie. Like, he never switched up his roles. Like, there was no diversification in casting Pauly Shore. No. If you casted Pauly Shore, that character was Pauly Shore. He was Pauly Shore in Encino Man. He was Pauly Shore in Son-in-Law. He was Pauly Shore in Jury Duty. Mm-hmm. He was Pauly Shore in a movie that I was going to mention, which is a totally 90s movie, because, you know, back in the 90s, it seemed like everybody could get a movie, and I don't want to divert too much from Encino Man, but he's in a movie that I will mention. It's kind of like a two-parter when I mention this one, but he's always playing just the MTV VJ, hippie clothes, stoner dude, Pauly Shore. But Encino Man is probably, I mean, it was his breakout as far as getting other roles, because that's what led to him getting everything else. And I'm not going to call myself a Pauly Shore fan, but I'm also not going to be a total hater either, because I think Son-in-Law was a good movie.
Son-in-Law is probably his most famous. I mean, it is a solid movie, and not just because of him, but the dad in that movie is.
Oh, Lane Smith. Lane Smith was great.
And here's our Saved by the Bell connection for Son-in-Law.
Amber Thiessen. That's right. Which, not only is Tiffany Amber Thiessen in that movie, but the guy that plays the a-hole ex-boyfriend of Carla Gugino in that, who also tries to use Tiffany Amber Thiessen to manipulate Pauly Shore, is the guy that tried to manipulate Kelly Kapowski in Saved by the Bell Hawaiian Style.
Oh, in Hawaiian Style.
Yes.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
Yes. The lawyer,
yep,
from Saved by the Bell Hawaiian Style, is the douchebag in Son-in-Law. Dan Gauthier was his name in real life.
That's funny. And Carla Gugino, whatever her name is.
Carla Gugino, yep.
Yeah. She was in Saved by the Bell as well. Wasn't she?
Wasn't no, she was
in wasn't. Episode? She wasn't.
Nope.
Okay.
She was in, Good Morning, Miss Bliss.
Good Morning, Miss Bliss. That's it. I thought she was, but Good Morning, Miss Bliss. She was.
There's actually a lot of tie-ins. I was thinking of the regular scene, but she was in Good Morning. She was the older girl that Zach had the crush on.
Yes. Yes.
Yep.
It always comes down to Saved by the Bell, Richard. People are like, God, stop talking about it. but we can't, so we won't. And what movie, other than Encino Man, is just one of your favorite Pauly Shores? I think you were trying to.
All right. This is going to be kind of a twofer because, like I said, especially in the 90s, it seemed like if you were popular for anything, you could get a movie. And that definitely went well with musical acts that became famous for being in movies or becoming infamous for being in movies. So the first part of this two-parter is Pauly Shore made his appearance in a movie that is not the most popular by this duo, but it's right up there with one of my favorites of all time, and that is Kid and Play's Class Act.
You know, we had kind of tossed a few ideas around when we started this, and you had mentioned that, and I forgot all about Class Act. But I love Kid and Play, and I did love this movie. Is this the one where Kid shaved his head or cut his hair?
Nope, this is the one where they braided it down.
Yeah. Okay.
They gave him the braids because this is one where they switched places in the school. Their files got mixed up.
I got you.
And you know, Kid and Play became famous for House Party. House Party, obviously, yep, the most popular and most influential. That's a great movie in its own right. I love the House Party movies. I'm a huge fan of old school hip hop, especially 80s and 90s hip hop. So anything that had to do with that, I was into. So House Party, I drifted right towards it. So Class Act, I mean, House Party, I was fortunate to be able to see movies like House Party when I was a kid because I had older cousins around and my parents were pretty lenient. Like, they knew that I wasn't heavily influenced by what I was seeing on TV, but House Party was an R-rated comedy and Class Act was Kid and Play kind of branching out into the family-friendly avenue because they also had a cartoon series for a short time. They were kind of utilizing their popularity among, you know, all demographics. But Class Act is just, it's a funny movie. It's another quotable movie. It's another movie that I could watch over and over. It's another movie that did not have an official DVD release, but I got it through Amazon, through like the print order, video on demand, or whatever you want to call it. Yes, I do have it converted. I converted the VHS to DVD years ago, as I did with many of the rare movies or the unpublished on DVD movies. But yeah, I mean, they're funny. There's a lot of like funny one-liners in it, a lot of funny scenes. If you remember the scene where they're trying to teach Kid how to dance and he accidentally slaps Play in the face and Play just kind of no-sells it and slaps him in the face. Just they have like a lot of funny slapstick moments, but Pauly Shore makes an appearance as the Weasel because he's Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
And he does his whole Pauly Shore thing. I'm a stony, crusty dude and like all that. And, you know, everyone, if you say no wheezing the juice from Encino Man, everybody knows what you're talking about. But Pauly Shore, I mean, you know, I've seen him pop up in a couple of things in recent years. He was in an episode of Hawaii 5-0. You know, he's never really shaken the image. I think he's just kind of embraced it. It's like, all right, you know what? Like, this is what I did. Like, I was a flash in the pan. I was a fad, but people remember Pauly Shore. It's not like he tried to be Paul Shore and try to be like an A-list actor or anything. He's like, you know what? It's like, I was a gimmick. And now that I'm getting older, I'm going to kind of write out what I can and do what I can. Because the episode of Hawaii 5-0 that I saw him in, he was in a bachelor party or like a guy's weekend. And it was him, Jaleel White, so Urkel from Family Matters. And Kevin Farley, who a lot of people don't know is Chris Farley's younger brother, but he became famous, and this surpasses the 90s. This is going into the 2000s. Kevin Farley became famous for being in MTV's Mock Boy Band Together.
Really?
Yep.
I remember that.
That was in the 2000s, so we don't have to talk too much about that. But yeah, MTV did a mock. They did a movie. It was like a parody movie, and it actually was so successful. They actually released a soundtrack, which is all just joke songs done by this band, but they actually had to recontract the actors and they put it to series for two seasons.
Ah, nice.
Probably famous off that.
Before we not talk about Pauly Shore, one of my favorite movies I feel of his is kind of underrated, but I'm kind of partial to it because there's a story behind it, but Biodome is great. And it really, really is 90s when you look at it. And, I mean, it's about the two stupid guys, and they get trapped in this, like, this experiment that these people were doing for a year where they're going to be locked into this their own world.
And it's Stephen Baldwin who gets a lot of hate, but I actually like Stephen Baldwin. I love
Stephen Baldwin. He was a great Barney. In the Flintstones movie, he was in the second Flintstones movie, which is much better than the first one.
And do you remember who the girlfriends were in Biodome?
Oh, if you hadn't asked me, is it? Go ahead and tell.
Well, one of them in particular became much more famous. Well, she was famous a few years prior, but she became much more famous years later. But Kylie Minogue.
Oh wow.
Kylie Minogue was one of the girlfriends, and Joey Lauren Adams from, famous for famous for being Chief Amy and everything there. And sticking along the 90s timeline, but do you remember the first time you saw her? Because I remember the first time I saw her, and it was on a very short-lived TV show.
Joey Lauren Adams?
Yes.
What was it?
She was on the Married with Children spinoff, Top of the Heap, starring Matt LeBlanc.
Matt LeBlanc, yep, and the dad. It was him and his dad.
Yep, yep.
Yes, because one of the, like Probably a lot reduced. Of times, like a lot of times they do, they show a backdoor pilot in the show of what, like Married with Children was an entire show about Matt LeBlanc and his dad.
Yes, yep, and he was like, and the dad was Al Bundy's friend.
Yep.
And I believe the backdoor pilot episode was the episode where Al was looking for the oldie song. And all he remembered was the him, and nobody could help him find it. And then he finally found the record. And at the end of the episode, Matt LeBlanc put his foot up on the table and smashed the record.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
And Biodome has a nice 80s tie-in because if you remember, the villain of Biodome was evil Professor Hathaway from Real Genius.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of tie-ins. A lot of tie-ins. I don't know if you like this movie. This movie was geared towards more girls, I think, but I love it. And I don't know what that says, but basically this is the movie I really thought of when I thought of the 90s movies that are totally 90s, and it's Clueless.
Oh, I saw Clueless opening night in the theater.
I saw it opening weekend in the theater. I didn't want to see it. I went with two girls, me and my buddy. We met these two girls that were friends in our school, and they wanted to go see it, so we went with them, and it was great. I think Clueless is a very underrated movie. Now, see it when it came out, but it is totally 90s, and has a ton of people in it.
But yeah, Paul Rudd, Donald Faison, like everybody, and there's some great little quips in it too. It's just Clueless is a timeless movie. Like a lot of movies that we mention, we talk about them being so totally 90s, but Clueless I think still holds up because at its core, it's just a great, heartfelt movie.
It is. It's a little creepy just because the love story is like a stepbrother and stepsister falling in love pretty much. But even creepier, it's Paul Rudd 20 years ago and he looks exactly the same.
Yeah, the man has not aged. And he has the greatest line in the movie. My absolute favorite line in the movie. And this goes back to prior conversations when I say that I kind of pick up on like the very subtle humor of things. When he's teaching her how to drive and he just goes, "Hey, James Bond." And he starts making fun of her for driving on the wrong side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
That to me is the funniest bit in the movie. But you want to talk about people that look exactly the same. I mean, even Stacey Dash. Stacey Dash was like 25, 26 when that movie came out. And then she was still playing the role on the TV show.
Yeah, that is funny because like 4 or 5 years later, there was a TV show.
Yep.
And Alicia Silverstone was not in it, but Stacey Dash was.
No, it was Rachel Blanchard was her name. And she was the girl that was Breckenmeyer. So tying into Clueless, Breckenmeyer was in Road Trip. The girl that played Cher on the TV show was his girlfriend in Texas that he thought he accidentally sent the sex tape to.
Oh, okay. Let's see if I get my movies right. Since we're talking about Breckenmeyer, so a lot of people love this movie, and I'm not really tied to it. I think it's the late 90s, but Can't Hardly Wait.
Oh, I love Can't Hardly Wait.
You do. It's 98, yeah. And I don't hate that movie. But like I said, I graduated in 96, so I had a few years where I didn't really watch movies, and I really didn't watch things like that, and I just kind of missed it. And by the time I watched it, I didn't have that nostalgia factor for it.
The funniest thing about Can't Hardly Wait is that If you had a yearbook of everybody that was in that movie,
crazy.
It's literally a who's who of who went on to bigger and better things.
Yep.
Like so many people in that movie.
Jason Segel. And it's funny.
Jason Segel. I mean, Jennifer Love Hewitt, obviously, she was like the big thing at the time. Ethan Embry was getting that big 90s push, but he never got to be anything big. He became more of a TV actor. He had like a couple of like starring roles and guest spots on stuff, but Ethan Embry, see, Can't Hardly Wait, I do like it and I am attached to it to an extent, but I am much more attached to what Ethan Embry did a few years earlier, and that is Empire Records.
Never seen it.
You've never seen Empire Records?
I've never seen it. It is the one movie that has escaped me. I remember when it came out. And I think I even rented it, and for some reason, I don't think I ever got around to watching it, and I've just never seen it. And people talk about it, and I really need to see it.
So Empire Records, I mean, you don't get more 90s than a day in the life of the staff of a record store.
Yeah, and the kids, they are like, record store, what's that?
And the whole premise of the movie is that the store, it's an independent record store, but the big chain wants to buy it out, and they're essentially rebelling against the fact that the boss is going to sell it. And one of the kids that's closing up takes the payroll for the day and heads out to Atlantic City and gambles all the money away. So not only do they need to scramble to make good on that money, but they're also fighting their own personal problems on top of the fact that they might soon all be out of a job. And all the subplots come together. Like every character gets some time to shine. There's a washed up 70s star who's trying to reinvent himself doing a signing at the store. And of course it's the 90s. So it's when alt rock and grunge and all that stuff is becoming very prevalent. So they're kind of, you know, shitting on his milquetoast, you know, pop friendly stuff. And, you know, how you were saying earlier, and we were mentioning how, you know, we're dads now and we're older now and all that stuff. And, you know, the guy would be signing autographs for like a younger girl and be like, "Oh, that's a very pretty name. Well, it's my mom's name. She likes who you are. I don't even know who you are." It's just, you know, it's just, and that's another movie that gets referenced all the time. The soundtrack is great. Like so many awesome people on it. It is the only time I've ever been attracted to Renee Zellweger. I've never thought she was attractive except in this movie. Liv Tyler's in it, and Liv Tyler was very totally 90s at the time because she was popular from being in her dad's videos. Awesome
Liv Tyler. She is the 90s to me. The Aerosmith videos are the best.
Now, if you seek out Empire Records, the version that's on Blu-ray and DVD is the fan remix edition. And it's essentially the cut where they put all the extended and alternate scenes into the movie. So it kind of takes away from, like, I feel like anyone who hasn't seen it needs to see it the way it was originally released and presented on cable and presented on video. So your best bet, honestly, might be finding a VHS copy of the original. Usually it pops up on cable like once a year. I haven't seen it on in a while though, but absolutely watch it, because I just, based on our previous conversations and knowing how well we bounce off each other as far as taste goes, I think you'll really enjoy it. Definitely seek it out, because that's one of my all-time favorites. That's just a fantastic movie. I can remember the first time I saw it, and I can watch it anytime it's on. I mean, I say that about a lot of movies because I'm kind of good at rewatching things, but seriously, Empire Records, and it's a movie, like, I've never met anyone who doesn't like Empire Records.
Yeah, I've always heard good things about it.
All of my friends, anyone I recommend it to, they've all wound up liking that movie. And, you know, it might be a generational thing. You know, if I recommend it to a 14-year-old cousin or something now, they might not get into it. They might not even get the whole premise of a record store. Why aren't they working at like an iPod store? But no, it's absolutely a great movie, and just the cast is great. Just everything about that movie just goes so well together, and that one trumps, you know, Can't Hardly Wait. And honestly, I mean, as much as I like Clueless, I mean, Empire Records is an even bigger favorite than Clueless of mine.
Oh yeah, cool.
No, nope, that one's definitely up there.
What about Reality Bites?
Reality Bites is a great movie. Reality Bites and Singles, kind of like that,
yeah,
that grunge scene 90s type of movie. Yeah, those are very entertaining too.
Yeah.
Definitely into those movies. And, you know, those movies and those style of movies gave us Lisa Loeb.
Yep.
And as odd as it is to say, like, most people wouldn't think this. I mean, I'm very diverse in my taste. But Lisa Loeb actually is responsible for one of my absolute favorite songs, and that was the song Do You Sleep that she sang. That song, oh, yeah, is up there alongside any hip-hop or R&B or rock song I could listen. Like, my musical selection is very diverse, and I mean, I've got thousands upon thousands of songs, but I could literally jump from a Tribe Called Quest song to a Kiss song to Lisa Loeb and not even bat an eye. And you might give me a side eye and be like, dude, really? But no, that, and, you know, those movies were very influential, and I think that they really captured, you know, see, Clueless and movies like that. And then, you know, later in the 90s, we got movies like She's All That and stuff like that. They captured kind of like the fun of high school and the fun of adolescence and stuff like that. Whereas Reality Bites and Singles were, you know, the struggling 20 somethings and the crappy dating scene and the trying to get your life on track. Mm-hmm. And it was more, you know, no pun intended, it was a more realistic look at what was going on to people that were only a couple of years older than us at the time.
Yeah, that's true. They are very different. American Pie came out in the 90s too. And that is it was a huge movie.
Oh yeah. That was another movie that I saw opening night. I love the American Pie movies. I'm a fan of the whole series. I even think American Wedding's pretty funny, even though that one is kind of out of canon. They did tie it back in when they did the American Reunion. Not a fan of the direct-to-video ones. I watched the first and was like, they're terrible. And then I saw one of them on Comedy Central one time, and it was just like, all right, it's kind of like what they did to National Lampoon.
I was just going to say that, like, it became the National Lampoon market, like, because they had American Pie, like Bandcamp, and then they had
the Naked Mile, Book of Love.
Yeah.
And they tried to tie it in. Like, they had Eugene Levy in like all of them, because I guess he needed money that week, you know? And, That was like the only tie-in, and, like, you know, Bandcamp was supposed to be like Stifler's younger brother, and it was, you know, they tried, but it wasn't the same. When they did American Reunion, I was ecstatic because I love those movies. I think that they're all funny in their own right. The first two especially. The first two are just some best comedies.
The first two are funny. I think the second one's actually funnier than the first one.
And they were like a throwback to the days of like Porky's and Revenge of the Nerds,
yep,
and though so they were like an homage in their own right, but they set like a new standard for it. And they were just such good movies. And I thought the casting was great. I thought everybody played a great role. Just, you know, Eugene Levy, I think he kind of had like a career renaissance by playing that goofy character.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That was especially to the mainstream. I mean, he was doing some indie stuff like passion projects and stuff, but I think that really got him back into the mainstream. He always creeped me out in Splash, though, when I was a kid. Like, I love the movie Splash, but he always... Yeah, Splash is a great movie. But
that's actually been on lately, too. It's been on the Showtime channels lately.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. It's a weird movie to watch as Big and Splash, both Tom Hanks movies, are really strange to watch as an adult.
Through different eyes?
Yes, yes. We watched Big about, I think just about two months ago. And it's very different watching it as an adult. It's still great. A little creepy, but still great.
You mean how he's, you know, a 10-year-old kid in an adult body getting seduced by his coworker?
Yes, 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 yes. Yes, all of that. yeah. And well, and she's sitting, when she drops him off, like, she watches him turn back into a little kid. Like, he's walking away and she's watching him, and then he is a little kid, and the suit is hanging off of him because he shrunk.
He shrank back down, yeah. So, which I think they intended that to be kind of like the heartbreaking scene, like the, you know, he's back to normal, but he's got to leave this life behind now kind of thing.
And I think in the 80s, I think we just live in a different world now. And in the 80s,
that's a conversation for a different podcast.
No kidding. I can't have that. I can't talk about any of that without fear of losing friends and stuff. But yeah, it's just a different world, and I think the 80s, you know, people just didn't think it was weird, and it was a great movie. So anyway, that's a little sideline there. But a movie that I love, and I clearly think – so when I saw the movie, I thought it was awesome, but now going back to it, it's hard to watch, but I still like it for nostalgia reasons. But it's totally 90s because it has virtual reality in it, and that's Lawnmower Man.
Oh, Lawnmower Man. I have not watched that in ages, but
I haven't either.
The virtual reality was it was like creepy virtual reality.
Yes, it was. It was.
And that wasn't even a movie that I thought of when we were talking about like totally 90s, because I wasn't really thinking about, you know, like you said, the virtual reality, and that was the big thing too in the 90s. Virtual reality.
Oh yes. TV virtual gaming. Reality was crazy in the 90s. I mean you had Star Fox. I mean, video games in general were just trying to do that virtual kind of 3D, because 3D wasn't really a thing, you know, I mean, in the early 90s especially. So they, you know, just that blocky texture of virtual reality was just huge.
Yep, and virtual reality became like the fallback for like every cheap B movie. Like, I mean, everything from action to karate to comedy, like, I feel like, you know, the whole virtual reality and the gaming and the alternate reality type stuff, like, we were talking about the dystopian futures with Prayer of the Roller Boys and stuff, and that stuff, I mean, it was like dime a dozen. Well, like once the mid-90s, especially with the video market boom in the 90s, everywhere you turned, there was something that had to do with virtual reality. But The Lawnmower Man, I mean, that had a hell of a cast, because you had Pierce Brosnan in that one.
Jeff Fahey. You
know, Jeff Fahey, yep. And that was before Pierce Brosnan became James Bond. Because Lawnmower Man was 92?
Yes.
Yeah, so he was still a few years away from being James Bond. So it's almost like, you know, you didn't really think of Pierce Brosnan as, you know, because James Bond is kind of what made him A-list again. You know, I think he was kind of like fading a little bit, but I mean, he did such a solid job as the Doctor in that movie. Like, he had a great, great performance in that movie.
I mean, the script was probably the biggest problem with that movie, if they're, you know, I mean, to go back to. But the acting, I mean, Jeff Fahey is one of my favorite actors. He's a great character actor. He's never really been the main of anything, but if you...
He was in Body Parts, which is very good.
He was in Body Parts. That was a great movie, which is in the 90s. I love that movie. He was Swamp Thing, I think, in Con Air. I believe he was the airplane driver, one of the inmates. Yep. And he was in Lost as well. So, I mean, that's
Lost I've never seen. So that one I can't speak to.
You've never seen Lost. Oh, man.
I've never watched Lost. But I was going to say he's a favorite of Tarantino because he turned up in a lot of Tarantino projects. He was in Grindhouse. He was in Machete.
True. Yep. He was. I forgot about that. Yeah. So what is anything else that you think we've missed that really call out from the 90s?
Oh yeah, this is kind of like the double shot of when I mentioned Class Act and how I said how a lot of people were getting movies just for being famous for other means, and this would have to be Cool as Ice starring Vanilla Ice.
Oh gosh, that is
which not only featured Vanilla Ice and his merry band of fellow rappers, but they were also dirt bike racers to capitalize on his real life dirt biking antics. And it's just a silly, silly movie. It's not a great movie. I mean, the biggest name in the movie besides Vanilla Ice was Michael Gross from Family Ties and Tremors fame. It's kind of creepy at points, like the way that he sneaks into the girl's room and just kind of cozies up to her while she's like waking up. Very, very like, you know, very rapey in some of those scenes. Like, I don't know how they get away with that. You want to talk about a movie, how they get away with stuff. But I'm a huge Vanilla Ice fan. I always have been. It's kind of a sentimental thing that took on a life of its own. Long story short, as a kid, obviously I was an impressionable youth, and despite my love for real hip hop, I did fall for, you know, people like Vanilla Ice and their music, and wound up learning the dance to Ice Ice Baby as performed in the music video, something that stuck with me through the years. So when I heard Vanilla Ice had a movie, holy crap, yeah. Did I have to run out and see that movie by any means necessary. And that is a movie that I will watch pretty often. I actually have the riff tracks to it as well. But it's another movie that it's like so bad it's good. Like, it's so bad it's entertaining, because there's so much you can make fun of. The acting is just non-existent. Like, there is one scene where John Hames Newton, who played Superboy on the Superboy TV series.
Yeah.
And then he became like he was on Melrose Place. He was on a bunch of TV series. But he's the ex-boyfriend of the girl. So, of course, he doesn't like these dirt bike rapper kids coming into his town. And they start smashing up one of the dirt bikes. And they think it's Vanilla Ice's. And Vanilla Ice comes over. And he's like, yo, that ain't my bike. That's Sir D. And John Hames Newton is like, who's Sir D? And Vanilla Ice goes, my homeboy. And John Hames Newton goes, well, homeboy this. And they start fighting. And it's like, they're not even trying. Like, they wanted to film a fight scene, and that was the setup to it. It's like, you can't take away from any of that. But yeah, Cool as Ice is definitely a 90s movie, because you've got a dirt biking rapper wearing his Stussy, wearing his baggy pants. Like, it's just that total 90s vibe. Like, you put that movie on, I swear there's got to be a way to like actually go back in time via watching that movie. That's how 90s it is.
Yeah, a buddy of mine around 95, 96, like, had this weird fascination with it, and we watched it all the time. So I've seen that movie numerous times.
Okay, so you've actually seen it more than once. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how much I paid attention past the first couple of times, but it was definitely on a lot. But Vanilla Ice was also in another 90s movie, Ninja Turtles 2.
Yep, Secret of the Ooze, which featured Ernie Reyes Jr., who was the star of Surf Ninjas, another very 90s movie.
Surf Ninjas, yep. That is very, very 90s. You want to explain Surf Ninjas real quick?
So Surf Ninjas, because everybody knows the Ninja Turtles. I don't think we need to go too in-depth with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. But, I mean, not only is it also 90s for featuring Vanilla Ice and Ernie Reyes Jr., but it also featured Kevin Nash.
It did, yep.
Just as the super shredder. So a lot of 90s tie-ins with the Secret of the Ooze. And Surf Ninjas was another way to kind of parlay on the karate craze, a way to do family-friendly. There was, you know, I think due to the success of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they wanted to find a lot of family-friendly martial arts style movies, because you had guys like Van Damme and Steven Seagal dominating for the adults. The video market was flooded with people like Don the Dragon Wilson, Cynthia Rothrock, and I could do a whole day recording with you on 90s action movies. but Three Ninjas came out, and Three Ninjas spawned a sequel. So Surf Ninjas was Ernie Reyes Jr., and Ernie Reyes Jr. is an accomplished martial artist. He actually had a TV show produced by Disney for ABC in the 80s called Sidekicks, where he was adopted by Gil Gerard, a.k.a. Buck Rogers.
Buck Rogers.
And you know, he would help his father and perform karate on unsuspecting people. Well, not unsuspecting people, but on bad unsuspecting people. And he and his brother are surfers and realize that they are heirs to the throne of Patusan, which is under a hostile takeover by Colonel Chi. Now, you're talking about a movie featuring surfers and ninjas, so you wouldn't think that the villain would be Leslie Nielsen of Naked Gun fame, dressed up like Kano from Mortal Kombat, but that's exactly what we have here. We also have appearances from Tone Loc of Wild Thing and Funky Cold Medina fame and Rob Schneider from Saturday Night Live. So if you are looking for a movie to say that it's totally 90s, look no further than Surf Ninjas. But as goofy and wacky as it is, it's just a fun movie. It's a lighthearted movie. It doesn't take itself seriously. It is meant to be a comedy, so it's not like you've got Leslie Nielsen trying to be a badass or anything like that. It's completely almost Spaceballs-ish in the way it kind of parodies like movie villains and the way things go. You know, he's very, very what's the word I'm looking for? Not sloppy, just kind of like very silly in the way he carries himself. And, you know, even when he's trying to be a vile villain, like it's still kind of like that dopey Frank Drebin-ish, you know, remarks and stuff like that. But Surf Ninjas, another movie that I saw in the theater. And I was going to the theater a lot in the 90s, you know, and especially anything to do with martial arts. But it's just a fun movie, and I think it gets overshadowed by a lot of the other family-friendly comedies, martial arts comedies and martial arts films of the time.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember watching it, but it's been many, many years since I've seen it. So a movie that I kind of forgot about, I didn't really forget about it, but I didn't think it was 90s, like in our 90s theme. But I don't know if you've ever seen it, but a movie called Stay Tuned.
Oh, with John Ritter and Pam Dauber, absolutely.
I love Stay Tuned. And the parody.
I believe the DVD is out of print on that one.
Really?
I believe that one's hard to come by. Either the DVD is out of print or it was never officially released.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Eugene Levy's in it. That's,
yep.
We always connect back.
Well, I watched that movie for one particular reason, because I'm a huge fan of Three's Company.
Yes,
and there is an excellent little in-joke of when they're trapped and they're channel surfing, and he gets caught on the Three's Company set, and he just looks at the camera and screams. And it's just a nice little inside reference for John Ritter.
Yes, I remember that. So, very briefly, Stay Tuned is where basically John Ritter and Pam Dauber get sucked into the devil's satellite and into all these TV shows and movies that you know, but they all have a twist. So, like, and especially the 90s, there's some 80s references too, but you had Northern Overexposure, you had Driving Over Miss Daisy, Dwayne's Underworld, which was Wayne's World. It was zombies. My Three Sons of Bitches, which is great. Facts of Life Support. I feel I need to watch this movie again because some of these are hilarious.
It's gotta be somewhere like easily accessible, because I'm pretty sure, because it's a movie that I watched it a million times, but I have it on VHS but not on DVD. And I was looking up the DVD at one point, and I swear it was going for like $60 or something like that.
Oh, wow. They actually, to tie back into wrestling, they actually had Underworld Wrestling Foundation, and it had a cameo of Lou Albano.
Yes, Captain Lou, famous for being Mario in the 90s.
Oh, gosh, was he? Yeah, so that's a great underrated movie. You won't hear many people talk about it, I don't think. But it is a very funny movie. John Ritter, I will always watch John Ritter. And I think the final like battle between them and
Jeffrey Jones.
Yeah, I think it's I think it takes place in a Salt and Pepa music video. So that's very 90s. to have salt and pepper in there. Might be 80s, I guess. Is salt and pepper 80s or 90s? They kind of bled through.
I mean, their breakout was in the late 80s, but it was, you know, like 1992 with like What a Man and all that type of stuff. That. But Push It was 80s. Push It was 87.
I gotcha. Well, I mean, so you wrapped up with Surf Ninjas. Any honorable mentions you want to talk about real quick?
Oh, man. I mean, I could go on and on.
I know you could go on. I know. We could make this like a four-hour
pleasure. Yeah, I mean, if I start dipping into too much stuff, I guess maybe an honorable mention for a 90s movie that's totally 90s would be Bebe's Kids.
Bebe's Kids.
They don't die. They multiply. And then Bebe's Kids was an animated film based on the comedy act of Robin Harris. Robin Harris was the actor that played – he was a comedian, and he also played Kid's father in the House Party movies. And so Bebe's Kids was him basically doing the stand-up routine about this woman named Bebe and how he was trying to woo her, and she had these kids, and they were portrayed as like these little animated brats, and he had to take them to a theme park, and the kids run amok, and it was just a goofy animated – it was an edgy animated comedy. It was PG-13, so it wasn't like a G-rated Disney affair. But it was a movie that got replayed on cable constantly. Usually it would kind of be like a double shot with Class Act or something. So that was always on. I feel like that 92-93 era of cable, Class Act, Stay Tuned, Surf Ninjas, Airborne, like that was kind of like, you know, my freshman year of high school. And it was just like the era where I started recording a whole lot more because I wasn't home as much. And that's how a lot of these movies became all-time favorites of mine or strong favorites of mine, is because they were the movies that I captured when they were, you know, riding their wave of popularity on TV, and I built my collection off of a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Great movie. I really love Bebe's Kids. I haven't seen it in many years, but I watched it a few times when it was out. Good animation too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The animation was great. It was just that was a funny, funny movie. And like I said, it was an edgy animated film. And Robin Harris was, you know, he worked blue. Like, he was not like a family friendly comic or anything like that. Like, he certainly had, you know, his act down pat. But it was funny without having to be too over the top.
Yeah, absolutely. A movie I want to mention, I don't feel like it's too 90s, but I mean, it was released in 91, and it's one of my all-time favorite movies. But when I think back about it, I mean, Sean Astin's in it, Will Wheaton's in it. I think there's a few flannel shirts tied around their waist.
I think I know where you're going with this one, and it's a movie that I like.
It's Toy Soldiers.
Toy Soldiers is a great movie.
That is a great movie.
Keith Coogan,
Louis Gossett Jr.
Yep. And it's funny because I kind of had that in my mind, because when we talked about Brendan Fraser earlier and how Encino Man was his breakout role, I was thinking in my head how his ensuing roles weren't goofy comedies, because he went from Encino Man to doing School Ties. And With Honors and like some more serious, you know, dramatic or comedy drama type roles. And I had the boarding school idea in my head thinking of School Ties, and it brought up a thought of Toy Soldiers, and I just kind of completely backtracked on it because I didn't want to go too heavy down the action route. But no, absolutely. Toy Soldiers is a great movie, a great cast, a great premise. Just a really, really great movie all around. Like I said, Lou Gossett Jr., Will Wheaton, trying to think of some of the other names on there. And it's a scenario. I mean, it was kind of like a Red Dawn of the 90s type of thing, kind of like the kids rebelling against the terrorists type of deal. But yeah, no, that is an all-time favorite action movie of mine.
Well, I mean, it's one of those that's rated R. And so when you're watching it as a kid, like, I mean, I watched this when I was probably 14. And so you just, I don't know, you see these kids that are basically your age in a not so, you know, not in a PG-13 or PG environment. So it's more realistic in many ways. Of course, the scenarios may not, but the way they act and act towards each other, because you really, I mean, I think the chemistry between all these guys is excellent.
And you know what? I think I totally agree with that. And I think it's because they were all within the same age range. They, you know, they probably all had the same agent at the time, for all we know, because they all basically grew up together in Hollywood together. So I think that the chemistry was their off-screen friendship really shining through.
Probably. So, a spoiler for a movie that's, you know, almost 30 years old. But is Will Wheaton the one that gets the kid that gets killed? Is he the one that gets shot? Like he runs out?
Yeah, yes, yes.
Okay, he's like the mayor's kid or whatever, or what? He's the highfalutin one's son, I think. And
the politician,
yeah, a great bad guy in Toy Soldiers. You know, in action movies, the bad guys to me kind of make it or break it for action movies. It's got to have a really good bad guy for me to really like a movie. It's got to have a good hero, but the bad guy can make it or break it, and that has an excellent bad guy. Kind of like Hans. He's sort of like Hans from Die Hard.
Yeah, and Hans is one of the all-time best villains.
Best ever. I mean, he is great, but I'll take Alan Rickman as Sheriff of Nottingham any day. Because he and Robin Hood, really, that's a 90s movie. Of course, it doesn't scream 90s, but other than the cast. Yeah, Alan Rickman and as Sheriff of Nottingham is the best.
I'm thinking now about Toy Soldiers. So when you said the son, because one of them's father is like a politician. He's like a judge or something. But the other one has the mobster father. So now I'm trying to think.
Oh, that's right. Which one is which?
Will's name was Joe. Will Wheaton was the mobster son.
Okay.
So, yeah, Will Wheaton was the mobster son, and the other kid was Phil. Was it Billy or Phil?
I think there's Billy in there.
There was a Billy, because Billy was Sean Astin, I think.
Okay.
Billy was Sean Astin. Let me see if I can look it up real quick. Let's see. Toy Soldiers.
I just put Toy Story. That's a totally different movie.
I'm all three. Usually I'm good on my feet with this stuff, but when you said the high profile father, I'm like, okay,
there were two of them in that movie. I mean, technically. All right, so
there was a Billy, which was Sean Astin, so I was right about that. Joey was Will Wheaton. Phil, who was played by Noel Johnson. Phil's father is a judge. Joey's father is the mobster. Joey gets shot, but his father's not the politician. His father is the mobster.
Oh,
so, okay.
Yeah.
We got that. All right, so there we go. We got that all taken care of. There we go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I knew it was Will Wheaton that kicked the bucket.
Yep.
Oh, and Army's in it.
Oh, yeah, if there was any type of terrorist military action type movie, Arlie Ermey was going to rear his military face.
Yeah, definitely.
And actually, mentioning Keith Coogan, another totally 90s movie before I know we're going to wrap up soon, but the star of Married with Children getting her own starring role in a movie which featured Keith Coogan. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Oh, my gosh. Right. That movie is totally 90s.
That is an absolute 90s movie because you've got the hottie from television. You've got, you know, everyone's got like a stereotypical role, like the grungy, lazy brother. You got Keith Coogan. The whole premise of her going to work and pretending to be in her 20s. Yeah. Joanna Cassidy is her boss. Josh Charles as the ice cream boy. And then it turns out that his sister is like the bitch that she works with. David Duchovny was in that movie.
That is funny.
He was the boyfriend. And I'll never forget. It was, you know, it had some of the worst dialogue in history. When they show up at the house for the fashion show and the brothers, like rocker friends, are all like acting as the valets. They're like, park it yourself, Metallica breath. It's like, I remember like we would just like quote the stupid quotes all the time because they made absolutely no sense. And that's just what made them funny.
I saw that movie on opening night with my buddies. We were in middle school, I think, I remember. And yeah. It was it's a great bad movie. Like you know, you have to suspend your belief a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's but you could only get away. I mean, this you couldn't do anything like that this day and age. Like, there could never be a modern remake because there's cameras everywhere.
Oh,
everybody's
yeah.
like, you can't get away with the fact that your babysitter dies and you hide the fact and all this crazy stuff. I mean, and that's probably why I'm so sentimental for a lot of the stuff that I grew up on.
You'll
and
never see it nowadays.
You'll never see it again. Just, you know, with the way society is, with the way everything's evolved, with the way attitudes are and political correctness, it's like, you know, keep me in the 80s and 90s and I'm good. You know, yeah. even the early 2000s gets a pass in some stuff. And that's not to say that modern entertainment is totally bad. But no, I mean, these movies, I mean, there's a reason why we're doing a 90s movies podcast and not a movies from 2005 podcast.
It's true. It is true. you know, we should definitely do an action movies podcast. I would love that because action movies are my favorite genre. Horror being probably a close second. Of course, I don't watch as much horror as I used to. But if many of you are screaming at your podcast right now, I feel like the 90s is Jean-Claude Van Damme, but I don't really want to mention him too much because he's either going to have a separate podcast of his own or be mentioned in the action movie podcast. But Jean-Claude Van Damme was one of my favorites. And he got steam in the 80s, but he really picked up during the 90s with Sudden Death and kind of fizzled out as well.
Double Impact. Double Impact's one of my favorite action
Double
movies.
Double Impact, Death Warrant. Death Warrant's one of my favorites.
Death Warrant's great with Benson, of all people, in that one. Robert Guillaume is in that one.
Yep.
Who was then saved by the Bell of College here. See, we tie it all back. See, it all comes full circle again. Double Team with Dennis Rodman.
I love Jean-Claude Van Damme. I mean, I Kickboxer, I think, is 89, but I truly love that movie. So we'll talk more Jean-Claude Van Damme, who made an excellent villain in Expendables 2. Just saying.
Oh, that was an amazing, amazing performance.
My favorite
that was
part of
absolutely great. And
he
you know, I won't go too deep into the action track because we could always save that for later. But yep. Like you said, Kickboxer was 89, but the Kickboxer sequels and my favorite of the entire run was actually Kickboxer 2, and Kickboxer 2. Not only picked up on the first one, but it starred Sasha Mitchell, who had become famous by being on Step by Step.
He was Cody.
He was Cody, but he was famous for being on Dallas before that.
That's true. And then he beat his wife, I think, and went away.
No, that actually was not true.
Oh, it wasn't
or not.
True?
Because, no, I guess his wife had some issues and he was going to withhold custody or something like that. And she was more or less making up excuses to try to get custody of the kids. But I guess I don't know if it was drugs or some other stuff. Cause there was a point where he was like jacked and there was a rumor that he wanted to like make an appearance in wrestling or try to wrestle. But actually, a wrestler friend of mine, who shall remain nameless cause I don't want to name drop too much, but someone who is somewhat known actually met him at a show and said that the Cody on television is the Sasha Mitchell in real life. He's just a very mellow California style surfer dude, like very, hey bro, nice to meet you, man. Like just, he said he was very cool, very mellow, not, you know, not walking around cocky, not puffing his shoulders, no big head. They said he was just a really, really cool dude to meet and hang out with.
Awesome. That's cool to hear. Well, good things cleared up on, because I've always thought that. That's what I had always heard, you know. I mean, even Entertainment Tonight and places like that reported it back in the day.
Yep. No, that all wound up being false. I actually saw something on it not too long ago because his name came up for something. It might have been when Step by Step was being re-aired and I was DVRing episodes and my wife asked a question about him and I looked something up. But yeah, that all wound up being a falsehood. And that was something that came out something like 20 years ago, too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been a while. It's not even like anything recent. Like that came out when he was still kind of.
Well, that ruined it. I mean, that stopped his career, basically. I mean, he didn't really do much after that. I mean, and I feel like not that he was doing like big Hollywood movies, but I mean, as far as like blockbusters or anything. But that Kickboxer franchise, he did like three or four of them.
he did part 2, 3, and 4. Part 5 went to Mark Dacascos, and they actually killed Sasha's character off camera in that one. And the whole premise of that was that Mark Dacascos, this character, had been friends with him and was like, oh, why is my friend dead now? And started kind of like looking into it. And as much as I love Mark Dacascos, Kickboxer 5 was not very good. The series kind of fell apart as it went on, including having a different Tong Po in part 4 with some of the worst prosthetic makeup in history. Just not good looking at all. But, you know, I know we're running out of time, but I'm going to throw one more 90s movies out there, and then I'm going to tap out on them. But mentioning Mark Dacascos, one of my favorite action movies, one of my favorite 90s movies, one of my favorite movies in general is the capoeira martial arts classic Only the Strong.
Oh, yeah. Was that the dancing martial arts?
The Brazilian martial arts, which is basically positioned as a form of dancing. And so what makes this movie totally 90s is not the fact that it's a karate movie, but it's the fact that Mark Dacascos returns to his old high school, which is falling apart at the seams. It's in Miami. The gangs have taken over. The drugs are being sold. And he decides to take part in an after-school program where he will teach the 12 worst delinquents in school martial arts and teach them respect and humility and everything. And it leads to a big showdown with the local drug lords. And it's a lot of hip-hop music. It's a lot of martial arts. It's a lot of Florida culture from the 90s. Like, you know, the villain is kind of like a Razor Ramon-ish Cuban gangster kind of guy. You've got all your high school stereotypes. You know, you've got the jock who thinks he's tough. You've got the kid who's really, like, got a heart of gold but has got a bad home life. And it hits on all the tropes, but it's just such a good movie. Mark Dacascos, I've always been a favorite of his. He's always been a favorite of mine since this movie. At the time, I was taking Taekwondo and wanted to learn capoeira desperately, but there was no one around here that was teaching that because I was very big into the martial arts when I was a kid. It's just a great movie all around. It's kind of like a Karate Kid of the 90s, if you look at it that way, in the sense that it follows that formula. And I think it's the movie that Dacascos is best remembered for. It was kind of like his breakout role. He did a little bit in mainstream Hollywood. He wound up hosting Iron Chef. He was on Hawaii Five-O in recent years. He's still getting some solid work. He did a lot of direct-to-video action in the 90s, which we can touch on at a later date. But Only the Strong is his first major role and my favorite role of his.
Yeah, so my friend that watched Cool as Ice all the time, this was his second favorite movie.
Oh, sorry. So your friends with the taste too, right?
So we watched it. We watched this one a lot as well, and I liked it. I always enjoyed it. I don't think it's quotable or anything as far as some of the other movies we mentioned. But you know, anytime they follow a formula that seems familiar, I think that takes us, you know, makes us feel comfortable too.
Yeah, because it's just easy to follow. And, I mean, if you've seen as many movies as you and I have, then we can just kind of absorb it very easily.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on once again with me and talking about movies and in the 90s. Figures Toy Company, that's where you're from. And I highly recommend them. I own a Joey Ryan figure from you guys. And I also hopefully will be getting some figures for Christmas because I've got some added to my list, and I'm going to have to get the Kenny Omega figure myself, I think.
I would highly recommend getting the Kenny Omega figure as soon as possible because sales have been very strong on that one. And as you know, Figures Toy Company not being as big as Mattel or Hasbro, the figures are done in a much more limited supply. And given the popularity of Bullet Club and getting their items into Hot Topic and places like that, licensing-wise, I don't know what would happen as far as a redo or a variant or anything like that. So I would suggest getting Kenny Omega when you can, while you can, because that first figure could be selling out very soon, especially with Christmas on the horizon.
And I'd say you guys have seen an uptick since the whole Chris Jericho invasion of Kenny Omega.
The Kenny Omega figure is our number one selling wrestling figure. Out of the Ring of Honor, out of the Legends, out of the Rising Stars, Kenny's number one. Adam Cole is probably the one that's the close second. The last time I looked at sales, Kenny Omega and Adam Cole, two most popular sellers. The Young Bucks still do very well.
I was going to say Young Bucks have to be close.
Oh yeah, they're still up there as well. But as far as the single figures, I should specify.
Yeah.
But we are expecting more figures in shortly. You know, right now we're talking here. It's about a week and a half before Christmas. So by the time this hits, you will probably see Chris Hero, Brian Cage, Rocky Romero, Jerry Lynn, Nigel McGuinness, Hansen from Ring of Honor, Chuck Taylor, and one or two others should all be in stock at that time. Along with the Batman 66 series that features the Julie Newmar and Eartha Kitt Catwoman. We've got the new set of Scooby-Doo coming in.
Super Friends figure. Scooby-Doo, I cannot wait for. I have to have a Scooby-Dum figure. That is one I am getting.
There will be a Scooby-Dum. There will be two Scooby-Doos to start. There'll be the regular and the frightened version, the scared version. We're doing the Headless Horseman, complete with a removable pumpkin mask. We're doing the Phantom...
The Phantoms,
yeah. Charlie the Funland Robot is coming out. Yeah. Velma's coming out, so Mystery Incorporated will be complete. More Super Friends, more DC Comics characters. Just we've got a lot on the plate. A lot more wrestling figures coming very soon down the pipeline that aren't coming in on this truck. I'm very hopeful that we might be at WrestleCon again this year down in New Orleans for WrestleMania weekend. So,
nice.
Yeah. A lot in the pipeline. So figurestoycompany.com, wrestlingsuperstore.com, at figurestoyco on Twitter, at WRES_superstore on Twitter. You can look them up by the company name on Facebook and Instagram. And if you enjoy hearing my wonderful voice chatting with Richard, if you want to see any of my pop culture posts or cross promotion from the companies that I love and work for, you can follow me on Twitter at Zach Malibu.
That's right. Well, Chris, like I said, I always enjoy talking to you, and we will talk again, and our next subject will probably be action movies, because now I want to talk about action movies.
All right, I'm going to have to call figures and take like a full day out of work just to back in on that one. And actually, one last plug, if we're going to be talking action movies, I do review action movies as a side gig. So
if you're into
these podcasts and if you're into hearing us chat about movies, you can read my reviews on action movies of all kinds over at bulletproofaction.com. I've got my own column, which is No Surrender Cinema, and I'll soon be doing one of the regular columns on the site. It's called The Checklist, where we rotate it, and it should be going up in the next week or so. So it'd probably be up by the time you hear this. And I reviewed a random episode of The Fall Guy.
Nice. Oh, I haven't seen The Fall Guy in a long time.
I've got the first season on DVD. It's the only season they ever released on Region 1, but someone has all of the ensuing seasons up on YouTube in pretty good quality.
Oh, nice.
So what they do with The Checklist is they just kind of pull an episode from a TV series, an action-oriented TV series. And when I was talking to the owner of the site, we were talking about Fall Guy stuff. And he said, hey, he's like, I need some extra content. Do you want to write something extra this month? I'm like, yeah, what do you want me to do? I'm going to do two columns this month. He's like, well, why don't you take The Checklist? Why don't you do a checklist of a random TV show? And then we had been talking about The Fall Guy. So I'm like, you know what? Let me just pull up a random episode. So my next entry onto the site will, in addition to my regular column, which usually goes up by month's end, will be a checklist focused on The Fall Guy, which is a show that I grew up watching and loving, but I haven't watched anything other than season one in the longest time. So it was kind of watching it with a fresh set of eyes again.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, until next time, Chris, I know this is going to air after the holidays, but I hope you have a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, happy birthday. It's almost your birthday this weekend. That's exciting. I hope you have a great time, and we will talk to you next time.
Thanks, buddy. Happy holidays to you too.
I would like to thank Chris again for always being there for me, for always coming on and talking about fun subjects. I always have a blast. I hope you all enjoyed it. Check him out over at Figures Toy Company. Not him, all the action figures he represents. I've gotten a ton. I think I'm up to like four or five figures now, which is a lot, I think. And my goal is for Scooby-Doo in 2018. They've got an entire Scooby-Doo line. Check it out. It's awesome. Until next time, guys. I really, maybe 2018 will bring me a catchphrase, because things just aren't working out.